Mini-episode 1913 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini-episode 1913. You have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and John Basedow, our great friend, the fitness and pop culture expert who has expanded into, of course, with JB's Fantastic Finds on Facebook groups here. One of his finest projects yet, arguably his finest project yet, the great auctions, the great fun things that's going on there. This is a gentleman who, as we were talking about off air here, has been able to continuously reinvent himself in different areas. And his interest in pop culture is what led to the fact that we have been doing our Oscars review for a number of years here. And we're reviewing the 2026 Oscars today. So a man of many, many, many different talents and a great friend of ours, John Basedow. John, it is great to have you back in as always. I always look forward to this segment.
As do I, my friend. It's a yearly tradition, but I did not know all high tech and fancy and now do video stuff. And I'm in a remote location with none of the, you know, none of the lighting and none of the accoutrements and everything for studio production. I have to be ready next time.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. And I'm sure by next time around, everything will work out fine on that. And It's great to have you on as per always. And one of the things that I know that we always like to take a look at when we're doing this is the red carpet, because that's where you go back to. I think it was one of the greatest ones ever. Ashley Graham, I think a number of years ago, wasn't she when she was wearing the thing with all the slits in it down the side, and somebody looked like she was an overstuffed blood sausage. I think was what one of these cruel red carpet critics said that. So it's hard to kind of top that as far as observations go. But
that's funny.
You know, I had a few from looking at the red carpet images here. And this is one where, you know, we start on, this is maybe kind of a cliche kind of a deal here, as I indicate with Nicole Kidman. I think it's very, very, very cliche to speak of somebody who is just coming off of a divorce or big breakup with sort of an eat your heart out type outfit. But certainly Nicole Kidman can pull that off. And I felt like she did at the Oscars.
She got a lot of praise, saying, I think they pointed out ageless wonder, and the fact that never looked better in her entire life.
Yes.
You know, saw her, and I think two outfits. Didn't she have she had one outfit on the carpet, and then she had one outfit, a long gold one as well, that was in both.
She really, really did, yes. There's another gentleman here.
With feathers. You know, she brought the feathers, and a couple of others, I think, brought the feathers as well.
Well, you saw that one. I didn't. But where I did see feathers was somebody that we've discussed previously, Demi Moore.
Plumage, so, yes.
Yes.
They call it plumage in fashion.
Yes, and I always find that to be kind of an odd fashion choice. But if anybody can pull off that look, it would be Nicole Kidman and Demi Moore. So, you know, I'm not going to question anything they do ever. They are entitled to the benefit of the doubt fashion-wise with what they can
rock. I think Nicole had hers around the waist. It's like at the, the top part with the thing. Whereas Demi Moore had the one where she had to sort of fight the feathers a little bit to talk into the microphone. And God forbid you're eating something afterwards, which nobody's going to do at the Oscars. So don't worry about that. But I mean, you're eating something, you might get a little bit of remnants in the feathers.
That's right. that could affect one's appetite a little bit if that ends up being the case. There's a gentleman that I'm very fond of that I'm going to reference here. I refer to him sometimes on the show as the honorary Bobcat, Timothy Chalamet, because going back to the previous season, not this past football season, but the one before, on ESPN game day. He was the only one that picked my Ohio Bobcats to win the MAC championship game against our hated arch rivals of Miami Red Hawks. He picked us to win, and he is a hero and an honorary Bobcat to all of the alums here. So I will say with affection that he looked like he was going to one of these white parties that sometimes the celebrities have. He looked like he was dressed for that, I would say, John.
Poor Timothy. Timothy, not a good night for him, but God, a great night for the Oscars. The Oscars should be sending him a fruit basket or a box of chocolates because he made them relevant again. Because I heard reports that the Oscars outperformed even the Super Bowl on social media.
Okay.
And the vast majority of clips, comments, mentions, tweets, and everything were all about Timothy Chalamet. He was like, and once again, him not winning, and also the fact that his movie got, I think, was nominated for nine Oscars and got shut out of everything. But
yeah,
everything was about him. That's what made the Oscars relevant again. I said, not so much a night for him, but a great night for the Oscars because of him. They owe him a congratulatory gift.
I certainly believe that to be the case. And that's a thing where, again, he made some sort of flippant comments in the lead up to the Oscars here, I guess, about the ballet and opera. And it's like, now I would say, like,
which were sort of accurate and made them relevant again, too. Nobody was talking about the ballet and opera until he dragged them a little bit and then made them relevant again, too. He's just, he should basically use his services to help other people rather than himself, because he did himself no favors, but a lot of other people and institutions' favors.
Yes, and I would say that, again, as a denizen of flyover country on America's north coast, you know, that's a thing that's kind of common. I will say, on the day that we're recording this, I refer to this always as flyover country, but apparently the big flyover today, which I didn't hear, was apparently there was a big meteor that exploded above the greater Cleveland area today. I was not privy
really
to that. Yeah. Apparently we had a meteor come in, going, I think, east to west, as it were. And so I'm literally in flyover country today, more so than usual. But in flyover country, we would not take his comments as being exceptional, because you don't find as many folks that are into the ballet and into opera.
In
the creative community, perhaps more of an outlier. You don't generally hear anybody in the entertainment industry bag on this stuff. But hey, props to him for his honesty, I would say.
I hate the way you have to walk on eggshells with certain people, that industry in particular. I mean, largely my industry for many years, but that's one of the things I hated most about it, that you have to walk on eggshells and avoid landmines with every little word you say.
Yeah.
Because there's actually a show that I've seen that calls him like Timothy Chalamet Shamalamalama Ding Dong Ping Pong. and all they do in this particular show is they just drag him and they just say the worst things about him constantly. And they were doing a whole campaign to have him not win an Oscar, because I think when this award season opened, what did it open with? The Golden Globes? He won the first award. He won the Golden Globe, and then he won nothing afterwards. He won no BAFTA. He won no SAG Award, which is what's the SAG Awards called now?
Screen Actors Award? Guild? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, but it's called, because it used to be called SAG Awards, but now it's called something else. He won nothing after the Golden Globes. And there were actually campaigns I saw online just trying to, you know, hurt him, just trying to bring all the worst things about him to life so that he doesn't win an Oscar. The whole campaign was people investing time and money, time and money, because they're doing it on their show, and they're obviously ostensibly getting paid by the views of their show. So they're investing all this time and effort into just dragging him down, and then they were rejoicing the fact that he did not win an Oscar. It's so much negativity, and they hated the fact that he did that thing where he goes, I'm doing some top-level shit. You know, that one comment when he was on, I think, one of the talk shows, and he was, years I've been doing top level shit. He says what he thinks, and he has a loose mouth in certain ways, but his movie was actually very, very good. And he was throughout it. He was, I saw most of the movies actually. I'm not that many were that great, but now that we have that wonderful Regal pass, we love you, Regal. With that Regal pass, you can go to the movies all the time.
That's right.
I don't take vacations, but I'll take a little 2-hour jaunt to see a movie just to clear my head, and that's all I need. That's for me.
Sure.
But I mean, his movie was actually very, very good, and he was throughout it. And I could see him. I could see him actually deserving to win that award because I thought he was very, very good in that movie.
Yeah, and
I'm not a huge fan. I liked his Willy Wonka movie. I liked that movie, but that's pretty much it.
Sure.
But I mean, I felt bad for him because they were going. There were actual shows going hard just to prevent him from winning an Oscar.
It is ridiculous. The guy that he ended up losing Best Actor to, Michael B. Jordan. He was actually the next guy I was going to mention, anyways. Interesting choice here, you know, with a black outfit that he was wearing, punctuated by, and as somebody who grew up in a blue-collar suburb, this looked familiar to me, wearing what we would call the stoner chain on there. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, something like you might have seen at Valley Forge High School back in the day, but with guys that didn't necessarily look like him, but nevertheless, yeah, an interesting choice for him. You've got Kate Hudson, who
but his outfit was he had the suit on without the tie, what, that Nehru collar type thing. That was a cool look though. And Kane was just a bit of personality and something to talk about. That movie is basically a vampire movie.
Yeah,
I don't think that far from Dusk to Dawn, but anyway, it's basically a vampire movie. But I understand in a little bit of research I did before this show that movie, Sinners, and Timothy Chalamet's movie did a lot of campaigning, a lot of hard campaigning for the Oscars, as they do, you know, social media campaigning, you know, getting their stuff in front of the right people and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, without the comments from normally you would not. I when I saw Sinners, and I actually liked that. I thought the movie was good. And you know, and I'm all about the vampires, but the thing is, it's not a movie that when you see, you'd ever, at least I, never would think would be considered for an Oscar. I never said, when I'm leaving that movie, there's an Oscar contender right there. Mm-hmm. When you leave, like, you know, Julia Roberts and Norma, not Julia Roberts, and, what was it, Sally Field and Norma Rae.
Yeah.
Roberts and Erin Brockovich. You leave saying, okay, that's going to be an Oscar contender. When I left the Timothy Chalamet movie, I'm like, that's Marty Supreme. That's going to be an Oscar contender.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's interesting the way some things can change.
It really is. And very, very interesting movie. No question about that. Some of the other ones that kind of jumped out of me here. Kate Hudson. You know, a lot of times I just jot down the first thing that comes to mind when I see somebody. The thing I jotted down with her was chocolate mint. That's what it seemed like she was kind of dressed as.
From Song Sung Blue, right?
Yeah, nice connection there. But yeah, so that's
and she also came in blue.
Yes, she did. Speaking of blue, this is like,
but she looks classic and she looks very pretty. That was a hard movie to watch. That had some
yeah.
sadness in it. I saw. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see it, but I heard what a bummer it was. You know, and as you mentioned, the blue yet again. You are anticipating the next one here that I had on the list. Marlee Matlin in a blue steel outfit, and I was just waiting for somebody that I could say this about here because what. What we like to do, now that we're up to mini episode 1913, I always like to see if I can connect something to the year. So Marlee Matlin in that blue steel outfit looked about as formidable as the establishment of the Federal Reserve in 1913, John Bastow. That's what I was thinking.
That's formidable. But, okay, it had a long train to it, too. It's got a...
Yes.
And she definitely looks quite formidable.
Yes. Yes, she did. She certainly did. The next note
that
I had,
that is a dark blue.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes. Like metallic almost. Yes.
Is that called a mermaid dress when it comes down like that? And the, at, you know, with the going in at the knees and then back out at the ankles and then the long train.
I think it might well be. Yes.
Okay.
I think so.
It gives me mermaid vibes. It gives me a blue mermaid vibes, like a blue siren.
See, we're speculating on what type of dress that was. We don't have to speculate as much on Elle Fanning's dress, which looked like, to a lot of people, a wedding dress, which, may I say, was enough to make me say, I do, in looking at her in that dress. So, that was my reaction to that. And for Spike Lee... Looking at him, all I can say is the thing I jotted down when I saw him was do the weird thing. That's what was coming to mind when I saw Spike Lee. It was that he wasn't he had some interesting accoutrements that were a part of his outfit there. And
Spike Lee is an attention getter.
Yeah.
Spike Lee knows how to, I don't know. I don't remember the last time I have seen a Spike Lee movie or heard about a Spike Lee movie making news, but he can come on the, you know, he can come in the Oscars with that attention getting outfit. And the sunglasses are the best, by the way. The sunglasses look like the ones you get when you are going to a tourist trap in Florida.
Yep.
And
yep.
You go, these are the shades I'm going to be wearing.
Yes.
With the white rims and everything. So,
yes.
Yeah. So, but he's getting mentioned on FDH Lounge.
Yes.
And is that a purple hat he's wearing? Is that hat purple?
I think so.
Okay,
I think that was the
bonus
case.
Points. Anybody
yes.
who wears purple on the red carpet, going back to who's the guy who was in the purple tux that time? Donald Glover, I think it was.
Oh, yes, he was. Yes, he was.
Yes, Donald Glover with the purple tux. That's another name you haven't heard in a while. But when he comes on the scene, he comes on the scene hard.
He knows what he's doing, definitely. And when you get to the actual ceremony itself, I think one of the things that's going to be relatively noteworthy when we look back on the 2026 Oscars is going to be the in memoriam section of it, which a lot of times is noteworthy for like who got snubbed. Mm-hmm, this time mm-hmm. around, maybe not so much that, but just the heft of a lot of the folks that did get mentioned, that did get honored as part of it, whether it be Rob Reiner, mm-hmm. Whether it be some of the other the legends along the way, Diane Ladd, Diane Keaton, some really, really big names in the biz. It just kind of a list this year that was like very, very noteworthy and very sad for how many giants of the game, Val Kilmer, Robert Duvall, Robert Redford, just any number of them. And I think that is one of the things that we'll remember the 2026 Academy Awards for, was the shout out to all of them.
There were a lot of big names. To be honest with you, when I saw a piece of that, it was when Val Kilmer's picture came up. I did not even realize he had passed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it, because at first, when I was first turning it on, I didn't realize it was the in memoriam segment where I was. And I'm like, oh, what's Val Kilmer up there for? And then obviously you see it's the in memoriam segment. I'm like, when did he pass? There were a lot of high profile passings.
Yes, there were. Among some of the others, Isaiah Whitlock Jr., another one of them, and Sally Kirkland, and just a lot of notable folks that did get the mention that they deserved. And then in terms of the night itself, with the awards here, we talked about this, that, you know, seeing the success here for best motion picture, one battle after another, it did very, very oh. well through the course of the night. You had ultimately that one taking six awards. That was pretty yep. noteworthy. But then you had some of the other ones. Sinners was another one of the movies that you talked about before. That was nominated a whole bunch, but didn't do as well. But it was quite a battle between some of the top movies for the different awards here. Best directing also, Paul Thomas Anderson for one battle after another.
Did you see that movie?
I have not gotten to see it yet.
Okay.
Do you have any thoughts about it?
Yeah, well, Sean Penn's role was, it was sort of a caricature, but he was great in it, and I could definitely see him winning a Best Supporting Actor for that, which he mm-hmm. did, and then he didn't show up. Was it Kieran Culkin? Who's the one who said, Sean Penn, I'm accepting this award for Sean Penn because he didn't want to come here?
That feels like something Kieran Culkin would say based on some of his
like,
past.
That's like something I would say. And I'm accepting this award for Sean Penn because he didn't want to be here tonight. which is like the perfect thing to say, because no matter what you say, that's what everybody's going to think.
I think that he has decided just to go in character as Roman from Succession to every awards show that he ever does.
I love the bluntness. I love the directness. See, now that one battle after another, that was another movie. Like, I'm like, I when I was watching it, I'm like, when is this going to end? When is this uh-huh. going to end? It's just, that was just with two caveats. Yeah. Tiana Taylor, I thought, was excellent and very and funny in ways. And I could see how she could be nominated.
Yes.
I've not seen her before in movies. And she was just a powerful on-screen performance. She was just powerful, over the top. What was she? Perfidia Beverly Hills, I think is her name in the movie. Perfidia Beverly Hills.
I think so.
But it was just such a disjointed, odd movie. In my opinion, it's just bizarre in many, many ways. But as standout performances, I could definitely see why they would nominate Tiana Taylor and Sean Penn.
Well, movies that we would refer to as disjointed and maybe even a little bit odd. These are ones that a lot of times are critics' favorites. So
yeah, but it's not disjointed and odd like Parasite, which is also good. I mean, it's disjointed and odd with when you leave, like, what the hell was that?
Right.
Anyway, it's neither here nor there. But that was definitely my opinion with that. Whereas Sinners, I like a vampire movie. So if you start with a vampire movie, it's hard that I'm going to leave saying anything bad about it. I just never thought it would be a movie that would be an Oscar contender when at the time.
Yes.
Whereas Marty Supreme, I think, was like made for Oscar contention. You could tell it was a tour de force for him. Very, very, very well done. I think, and I thought he did a phenomenal job in it. As far as that goes, unfortunately, he just got a lot of people against him because of some things that people blow far out of proportion after the fact.
Yes. And that's the kind of thing that is going to happen. Of course, Michael B. Jordan, as you said, in that movie, in the role actually of twins, Elijah Smokemore and Elijah Stackmore. So that's the kind of thing that's going to help you at the end of the day in a best actor race here is maybe even a little bit of cheating, right? If you're having to play two different roles. But then again, there is a difficulty.
Back in the day, remember, Michael B. Jordan goes back in the day all the way to All My Children.
Yeah.
Shot right on, 67th Street in New York City that I would pass by all the time. And back in the day when you were competing for a soap opera award, the saying was, if you were in contention for the daytime Emmy, if you were playing a duel, that was your in.
Yeah.
I just never saw it necessarily happen with the Oscars. In the Oscars, they always say if you ugly yourself up or if you make a massive change type of thing, that's like a big thing for an in, like with Charlize Theron and Monster and stuff along those lines. But Michael B. Jordan goes back to soap opera roots, so he might have been thinking something in the back of his mind, because that I remember every time daytime Emmys were coming around, with Erica Slezak, Victoria Lord Buchanan on One Life to Live was nominated, everyone would be nervous because she plays the schizophrenic personalities, multiple personalities and multiple parts. So whenever anybody had the double role to play, they were always like, that's the favorite.
That's the first one I was thinking of. I was thinking of Erica Slezak on that. I don't know of too many other ones who played.
How many times did she win? She won all the time. They may as well have just bust the Oscar to her. They could have gone there with a shopping cart.
How did we not ever see
Daytime Emmy? Daytime Emmy.
How do we never see a Nancy Kerrigan, Tanya Harding thing between her and Susan Lucci for all the times she ended up picking out Susan Lucci for best actress? But yeah, I mean,
Susan Lucci became more famous than anybody because of the fact she was nominated like 15, 16 times before she ever won. The fact that she kept losing made her more famous than if she had just won it the first time she was out.
Yeah, paradoxically, best thing that ever happened to her career.
100%.
And when you're talking about Best Actress, the one that won Best Actress this year, Jessie Buckley, she is somebody who has been in a lot of critically acclaimed things, kind of working her way up over a period of time. And she is somebody who I first became aware of somewhere about maybe a little bit over 10 years ago, watching her. It was a revelation. I'm a huge fan of the Fargo franchise, and she was in season I believe 4 of Fargo.
Really?
As a crazy nurse. And yes, I highly, actually, if it was that year, so that was in 2020, I think, actually. So it was a little more recent than that. But yeah, so she did a great job in that role. And it's always really kind of interesting to me when I see, because a lot of times I kind of tend to use sometimes the whole slotting system of like pro wrestling when I look at, some of the nominees, because like Michael B. Jordan, like that's a guy where, he's a main eventer to me. Like, he, you could put him in the movies like the Creed movies and everything like that. You know, they're going to do box office versus Jesse Buckley. To me, like, in pro wrestling, they would call her more of a work rate person. Somebody who really, like, she can give you a 5-star match, so to speak, here, but you don't necessarily, like, she doesn't get the Nicole Kidman type roles yet, Demi Moore type roles, whatever. But, like, I think she's on her way to that. A lot of times you graduate to being a box office person when you win an award like this. And I think Jesse Buckley certainly has the talent to graduate to that and to become a leading lady at the box office as well as in the honors.
I know, interesting about her was I was listening to stories and reports about her. I didn't know she got her start on reality TV over in, was it England or Ireland? Like, not Big Brother, but it was like one of those like reality shows. Because they were talking about how now she's being talked about. And she also did The Sweep. I don't know if you realize, you probably do, but I mean, the Golden Globes, the BAFTAs, the SAG Awards, everything. Swept for Hamnet on everything. And the thing is now, I mean, they say they're marketing her as this like critically acclaimed actress. They go, nobody talks about the fact that she got her start on reality TV.
Yeah. Well, you can, and then, like I said, and that she's become, you know, this really great, and like I said, using the wrestling terminology of like work rate. Yeah. Somebody that started out in that is somebody who has become a very, very, very critically acclaimed actress. You wouldn't normally put the two of those together, John. No. It's an interesting thing, but it fits in her case. And it just goes to show that no matter how much pure talent you have as an actor or an actress, sometimes you need that boost up to be able to get into the industry in the first place. So to see her come from the unlikely roots of being able to do that to where she's at winning the Academy Award for Best Actress, that's very inspiring.
We love an impressive story. Nothing inspires like it.
Yes, very much so, and she did a great job, and as is always the case, you know, winning against an impressive field, Rose Byrne, Kate Hudson, and among others for that. So yeah.
Speaking of the one thing I will say, probably my favorite movie of anybody who won anything of all the movies out there was definitely Weapons.
Okay.
And the lady who won for who was just the scariest character you can ever imagine. She was just literally frightening in Weapons. Who won for Best Supporting Actress was amazing.
Oh, next. Yes. Yes, and that was for Best Supporting Actress.
Was Madigan?
Amy Madigan, yes.
Madigan, right. Amy Madigan.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, she...
Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying woman in that movie. Terrifying.
Yes.
The stuff of nightmares.
And across quite a career that she's had too. So to be able to win something that big, you know, in that way, much like Sean Penn, who won for Best Actor in a Supporting Role, something where he's had a number of great roles through his career and wins with this. The same thing with Amy Madigan. So nice to see somebody who's so long in the game who can still go in there and do an award-winning performance.
And she also inspired my favorite part of the Oscars. Telecast.
Okay.
And that was Conan's open when he was dressed up as her, when Conan's you know, with that wig on with the frighteningly short bangs.
Yeah.
And the kabuki like white makeup. Mm-hmm. And that's her character. That was her character in Weapons. And when all the children are chasing him.
Okay.
That's from the movie Weapons. And then they're chasing him through like the scenes of the other movies, which I thought was inspired and extremely clever.
Mm-hmm.
That was all inspired by her horrifying character.
Okay. That is that's interesting, because I didn't know that.
The cold open was my favorite. I thought it was very somebody said, oh yeah, you know, they were talking about, you know, the fact that, oh, I could see that coming, blah blah blah, but I thought that was extremely clever, and I thought it was very, very well done. I was running through the other movies and you're seeing the iconic other movie scenes as the children are chasing him, because, not to be a spoiler, but what happens is she does that whole weaponizing procedure through black magic type things, witchcraft, weaponizes these people, and the children are the ones that are chasing her at the end. She was, you know, and their whole goal is just to catch whatever they're weaponized against. They're simply weapons, and to catch and kill whatever they're weaponized against. So to use that and have him chasing through the other movie scenes was very, very clever and funny.
It is, and it is exactly something that I would expect from him. I think in this day and age, I think he's the perfect host for a show like this at a point in time when the field for that is really, really, really diminishing. Because over a long period of time, you could look at a couple of different folks potentially, whether it be from late night or prominent comics or whatever. But like today, I don't think that there's a whole lot of people who are really suited for a show like this. I mean, like one of my favorite comedians of today, Shane Gillis, I wouldn't be nominating him to do a show like this. You know what I mean? But like Conan O'Brien seems to just fit it perfectly. He knows the assignment.
He might bring something interesting to it, though. Shane Gillis might bring something interesting to it.
It would be memorable. It would be very memorable. And I think the ratings would probably be substantial because people would be like, oh my God, what's this guy going to do? You know, somebody that calls out Nick Saban to his face.
I like when they have the blunt host like Ricky Gervais, I think, is excellent at it. And I like when they keep the politics out of it. I hate the political stuff. It's just such nonsense. Give it a break and, you know, let people relax and enjoy themselves. And that's the whole point of the movies. It's to give you an escape from reality, not to, you know, spread your case and spread your opinions.
Yes. And as somebody who has been doom viewing a lot all throughout the month of March and wishes that he could stop, I sincerely agree with what you're saying there, because we do need a break from things. We do need a break from the real world. And this is something that the Oscars can provide to us. And it's really, it seemed like it was a ceremony that went very well this year, all things being equal. And I think, again, you know, there were some, and again, as we went through, some interesting things that I think we would say about the red carpet. I don't know that anything is going to be super memorable, you know, even a year or two from now, as far as that went. But like, all in all, it seemed like it was a good evening all the way around. The red carpet, you know, good, but not great. The ceremony itself seemed to go pretty well. So something that you would think that they could be happy about as they start to go into their unknown future of becoming a primarily streaming ceremony.
Yeah, and also speaking of the red carpet with your mention of Jessie Buckley, I mean, it was definitely her night because I thought she looked amazing on the red carpet. The red top, the pink gown under it, and everything, very, very, very beautiful. And then she also ruled that whole award season. I mean, that was a nice way to culminate over it. And then hearing that the awards are going to, what are they going to be, streaming on YouTube, I think it is, starting next year is what they said?
Something like that, I think. Yeah, it's an interesting type of deal there.
It's smart.
I mean, it's gonna reach you know, a different audience of people, and so I mean, you know, I don't know what the viewing metrics are going to be, how they're gonna track that as opposed to the standard ways of doing that, but as they start to, you know, move into this brave new future and you know, as they try to cultivate a younger audience again, here's hoping that they're not getting like, you know, YouTube streaming stars to like, I don't need to see, what's the guy's name? I Show Speed or whatever the hell his name is. I don't need to see that guy hosting the Oscars, right? Let it not be YouTube influencers hosting the Oscars from here on in. Let it be somebody like Conan O'Brien. If they gave him a lifetime contract, I think I'd be fine with that.
No, he was good. I think he was good. I thought the YouTube sketch that he did with was that Jane Lynch? I think Jane Lynch was interrupting with the commercials and everything. That was hysterical. when she's like, you know, he's like saying, we're going to be moving to YouTube, and all of a sudden it just goes straight to a little commercial of her saying, and if you've been damaged by this device or whatever, call so and so, you know.
Yeah.
And coming on just so loud and abrasive, just like those commercials do. It was clever. And also, I think that this whole broadcast was produced, which was smart because they got such great social media coverage, so the proof is in the pudding, was produced with social media obviously in mind, because they produced it in usable clips.
Okay.
And stuff that could be clipped in smaller segments, much like the cold open, much like that YouTube clip I just mentioned with Jane Lynch, and much like different segments that were very, very social media friendly and social media encapsulated size that could be, like it or not, comment it on, because it doesn't matter whether they like you or hate you as long as they talk about you. Because as long as you're getting the views, that's what matters. And I think they were, I think traditional media is being forced to, I mean, they realize obviously that they're dying in the sense, and they're being eclipsed by new media in many, many ways.
Yes.
And usually so. But most of the time they just ignore it. And I think that the Oscars, obviously moving to a streaming service moving forward, but in this year was, you know, produced this one on traditional media in a way that was going to be very new media friendly for broader distribution and also many more eyeballs seeing it.
Yes. And I think that's going to be key in the years to come, is that they are going to have to be able to do that and put up things that can be consumed in bites on TikTok and some of the other platforms out there. And yeah, it seems like they're really getting a sense of how to do that. And any of the little skits that they have done over the course of the last several years, or, you know, excerpts of a monologue or whatever, those are already made for that anyways. So a way to kind of serve that up for people to be able to consume as they want. And it will be interesting to see what form they take as they finish out the 2020s and go into the 2030s. But, you know, whatever they're doing for however long they're doing it, you know, it's always great covering it with you, John Basedow. It has always been something I look forward to every year, is being able to break this down with you. It is always fun and insightful. And as always, I can't thank you enough. And I just have to plug again, JB's Fantastic Finds on Facebook, Facebook groups. They're quite a show. I actually, part of my whole thing with Doom viewing recently here, having on some of the cable channels that are more likely to get the ad up on right there, I've been seeing it a decent amount recently.
Yeah. It was funny. You mentioned your dad always sees it and stuff like
yes.
that. Yes. There's actually, you know, it's funny because now we have a various national deals, but one of them is on one of these national platforms that actually with DirecTV and everything, always goes into, it's carried a lot in like airports, which is great, like bars or restaurants or hotels and gyms. And in addition to obviously being in people's homes and stuff. But it's funny because now that we have this deal where it's in a lot of these public spaces, everybody's coming up to me and it just started also. And my gym has like DirecTV. All the gyms I go to have DirecTV is what they use. And so it's like on a lot. Uh-huh. And the thing is, like, while it was going under the radar a little bit beforehand, now everybody's like, oh my God, I see it all the time. And blah, blah, you know, and people who don't know me coming up just saying, it's the sold guy. It's the sold guy. Sold as I'm crossing the street. Sold as I'm getting out of the car. Sold.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, God bless. There you go.
And it's like what I said at the top of the show here, the master of reinvention, fitness, pop culture, now this. And as you and I talked about off air, there'll be something to come subsequently from you. You're going to have another reinvention thing down the road. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves
it's budding already because you just heard her a few minutes ago jumping in on this broadcast. But watch out for Little Storm, my little Skipper Key, because she is now the number one dog in AKC Rally. As of 2025, she topped the charts in AKC Rally in Advanced, Excellent, Master, and Choice in us just beginning this. So she'll be doing some stuff coming up soon, which is exciting. I've never been into dog training and things like that before.
Yeah.
These things start out of the blue, and I just love it. And now she's getting all these brand deal offers and all sorts of things coming our way from that. So you never know when you're going to see her too. Plus she also got some national articles from just being in the JBFF commercials too.
Nice. Well, you just teased out the thing I was thinking of there. Yeah. So, I mean, I've never known anybody that's been able to do as many different reinvention things as you, John Basedow, but I am always appreciative of getting to see how you do this. And it's very, very inspiring as a fellow content creator here. So, you know, always a pleasure having you on. I can't tell you how appreciative I am.
Well, no matter what's going on in my life and no matter what changes may happen, I always make time and always look forward to having our little chat about the Oscars because one of the accolades I am most proud of is, as I say, FDH dignitary.
Yes, and that'll have to be a clip and save for some of our future promotional efforts, but
there's nothing like being FDH dignitary, man.
Yes. Well, there are perks that come with the territory. And, one of them is getting to have a fun Oscars discussion every year. So it's great to be able to do that with you, John. And like I said, I thank you so much for this, for being here as always. And I want to thank everybody for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1913.